How about that?
There we go.
Oh, well, I'm not a techie like Ashley. I don't know about these on-off buttons. So, tell you what. We have a cordless. Do you have the mic, Bill? Would you like to open us up in prayer since you have it?
Dear God, we praise you for your mighty glory, and we thank you for your loving attitude towards each one of us. Mm-hmm. We very much appreciate your willingness to share your power with us, that all we need to do is ask. And so help us, each one of us, to turn to you with much more frequency, with much more intensity, as we look for ways to take the message of reconciliation that you have given each one of us and help us to share that message with joy and comfort, and that you do your work to bring those we speak to into your loving family. And we ask this in the name of Jesus. Amen.
Mm-hmm. Amen. Well, this is where we stopped last time. Does everybody have a part two handout and something to write with so you can take some notes? Well, this is where we stopped last time. I made the suggestion that there are three basic things, other than God's Spirit and His help, obviously, three basic things that I think we need: some changes in our thinking, some creative tools, and some determination. Now, although many of the principles that we've talked about in this workshop are very biblical, my good friend sitting there, Bill Johnston, thought I should give some scriptural justification for these three things that I think are critical, which I thought was a brilliant suggestion, by the way. It's very risky to tell one of your closest friends that they're brilliant because they may actually start to believe it's true. So don't do it lightly. In this case, it is true. The first thing we need is a remote for the slides. The first thing we need is some changes in our thinking. And I came up with a few scriptures that address this. And the first one is Romans chapter 12, actually the first three verses, but chapter 12, verse 2 says, now I'm going to go over these verses one at a time, so there's plenty of time to write them down on your handout. As fallen people, all of the battles we face are either won or lost in our minds primarily. Our thought patterns will either enable us to do what God has us here to do, or they will neutralize us and take us out of the battle. Romans 12, verse 2 is a great verse that addresses changes in our thinking. Paul says in verse 2, don't be conformed to this world's way of thinking, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. We need to think like Jesus thought. We need to think about other people the way Jesus did. And we especially need to think about fallen, sinful people the way that Jesus thought about them. How we think about people will definitely determine how we treat them. And it will determine whether or not we take the risk to speak up and talk to them about spiritual things. How we treat people will definitely determine how well our words are received. In 1 Corinthians 1:16, Paul says that we literally have the mind of Christ. Now, he doesn't say we should try to have this. He says we already do have it. But for it to do us much good, we have to focus on it. We have to consciously focus on seeing people the way Jesus did and then treating them the ways that Jesus did. The third verse in Romans 12. Yes.
1 Corinthians 1:16.
Yeah, but
Oh, okay. Well, whichever verse Paul says we have the mind of Christ, that's the one I meant to put up there. Thanks for that correction. So anybody listening to the recording, get your concordance out and find the phrase mind of Christ, and you'll find it there. Thank you for that correction. In verse 3 of chapter 12 of Romans, Paul says this. He says, we should be careful not to think more highly of ourselves than we should.
1 Corinthians
2:16 is the mind of Christ verse. Thank you, Jack. So in Romans 12:3, Paul says, don't think of yourselves more highly than you ought to. And that's a major change that most of us need to make, don't we? In Philippians 2:3, Paul puts this even more strongly. He says this, he says, do nothing from selfish ambition or conceit, but in humility consider others better than yourself. Notice he doesn't say to consider others as good as you are or on equal footing with you. He says to actually treat them as they're more important than you are. And yes, this is a tall order. This is very tough to do. But when we come even close to treating people this way, we're going to earn the credibility to share our faith. Now, just think of how much credibility a person would have, or maybe a person does have with you, who treats you like this much of the time. The next thing we need is some creative tools. And the passage we went over in Colossians 4, chapters verses 3 through 6, is the best summary of these tools that I can find. First, we need to make it clear in the way we speak. We need to clearly explain things so that people can really understand what the gospel message is. We need to use analogies and stories and word pictures to explain spiritual truths to people. And we need to be able to tailor these things to the person that we're talking to, depending on where they are spiritually. And if you go back and read the gospels, you'll see the master of doing this was Jesus. He did this all the time. He took stories and analogies and parables, and he tailored them to fit where that person was spiritually. We can do that too, but remember, we need to find out where they are spiritually, and that's where these conversations and questions and really listening come in. Next, we need to use wisdom. There's a big difference between knowing a lot of facts and being able to use those to share with people. Be gracious, of course. We all know how important that is. And be knowledgeable. We need to do all of these things when we're sharing the gospel with people. The next thing is we need some determination. We're all familiar with Matthew 28:19-20. This is the Great Commission. This is where Jesus said for us to go out into the world and make disciples and teaching them to obey everything that I commanded you. We have to make a conscious decision to do this. This is not just going to happen by accident. It'll take some determination on our part. Paul never could have done the things he did without a huge dose of determination. In 1 Corinthians 9:19, Paul said, though I'm free and I don't belong to anyone, I make myself a slave to everyone, that I might win as many as possible. Considering himself their slave means that Paul was determined to serve people in any way he could. And then in verse 22 of the same chapter, he said, I have become all things to all people that I might win some. He was determined to relate to people by any possible means in order to get the gospel to people. And in 2 Corinthians chapter 11, verses 23 through 27, Paul gives a list, not a conclusive list, but he gives a list of some of the horrendous mistreatment that he voluntarily put up with. He was almost beaten to death several times. He was shipwrecked. He went around hungry. He was thrown into prison. but he was determined to play the role that God had for him to play. And he wasn't about to let any circumstance get in the way. He was the epitome of determination to share the gospel. There are a lot more passages that bear on these things in the New Testament. And the next time you're at a teaching and you hear someone teach on passages that bear on these things, hopefully you'll remember talking about them today. Now, I did get one more email from one of you this past week about sharing things with family members. Now, I don't know why, but I think for most of us, including me, family members seem to be the hardest people to talk to about spiritual things. Now, with family members, we already know their church background, right? We already know an awful lot of things about them. So all of the primary things that we need to know about a person are already in place. So you would think that it would be easy to share with family members. But much of the time, it's not. Now, one big advantage we do have talking to family members is we've already built up a great deal of credibility with them. And it's very unlikely that we're going to get rejected by sharing something spiritual with a family member. So here's a suggestion, and I did not make this one up. I got this one out of one of the books on sharing your faith that are at the end of your handout. But if you've never actually shared the gospel with one of your family members, consider apologizing to them. And here's what I mean. Sit down with the family member and say, you know, I need to apologize to you for something. And they'll probably ask what it is. And then you could say, well, you know that I've been involved in spiritual things for a while. I study the Bible. I go to church. But I don't ever remember sitting down and asking you what your spiritual beliefs are, and I'm sorry. Would you tell me what they are? Now, who's going to respond badly to that? Nobody. Or you could say, I need to apologize to you, and they'll ask why. And you can say, well, you know, I've been involved in church for a long time, and I'm a believer in Jesus, but I've never really sat down and explained to you what that really means, and I'm sorry. Can I share that with you? And I think you'll find that most of your family members will respond pretty positively, and they will let you sit and explain this. If you have shared the gospel with a family member and they're not interested, I would encourage you to do what was suggested to me at one of my workshops. A young lady spoke up at the break and said that she had shared the gospel with her mom several times, and her mom was totally disinterested. And so she asked me what more she could do. So as the teacher, I thought I had to come up with some creative way to explain it again. And another lady in the class who was about my age spoke up and said, I don't mean to correct the teacher, but she turned to this young lady and said to her, I was right where your mom is for a long, long time. And then she said that she was on occasion hostile with her kids who tried to share with her. But she said her daughter was persistent in planting seeds with her. But she said that her daughter continued to love her and was patient and gracious with her and showed her a changed life. And she said that's what made the impact on her. And this lady eventually did get saved. So the answer to your question didn't come from me. It came from a lady at one of my workshops. So if that was your email, you can thank her for that. Now, we're fairly close to being done. And I apologize for last week keeping you so long. That just means that this one will be shorter, which is good. I want to mention a few more pretty common situations that you may find yourself in. Now, if this has not happened to you yet, I guarantee you it will. What if somebody looks at you and very bluntly says, I don't want to hear it? Well, you should honor their request. You should temporarily honor their request. Remember that people's lives and their hearts do change. Let some time go by And then go back to that person and say something like this. You know, I remember you saying you don't want to talk about anything spiritual. Do you still feel that way? Or you could put it this way. I remember you saying you don't want to talk about anything spiritual. Would you mind telling me why you feel that way? And they may share that with you. But if somebody tells you they're not interested, just let it go. If you don't, if you push, you're going to come across as just another pushy religious person. I'd like to tell you a little story about a person who didn't want to hear it. Back in the mid-90s, I dated a lady named Linda. We were together for about three and a half years, and she was totally closed to anything spiritual. Every time I brought it up, she said, I don't want to hear that, and you can fill in your own blank. And so in August of 97, she was diagnosed with stage 4 lung cancer. And she lived 1 year. She had a son in elementary school and a daughter in middle school whose father had already died of cancer. So they were going to be orphans. I was with her through the whole thing, her chemo, her radiation. And she had gone to several spiritual things with me and met some of my friends. And she had heard probably the gospel growing up. She went to church growing up. And I never did find out why she was so close. And so after her last radiation appointment, the oncologist basically told her, there's nothing we can do. Go home and enjoy what little time you have. So we were driving along in the car, and she looked at me and she said, I've taken care of the lawyer and the guardian and the insurance. Is there anything I've missed? And I started laughing, and I said, well, there is one little thing you've missed. And she said, what's that? I said, the issue of where you're going to spend forever. And she said, you know, you've been trying to talk to me for years. I'm going to listen. So I started with the simple bad news, our guilt before God. And she said, believe me, I know about that. And then I explained the gospel, the good news about trusting Jesus. And she looked at me and said, now, you only have to do that once. And I said, if you understand what you're doing and you mean it, once will do. And long story short, she made that decision about 2 weeks before she died. Now, if I'm talking to somebody who's dealing with a serious illness, it would be very normal for me to tell the story about her, which I have done countless times. And every time I do tell the story, they hear the gospel very clearly. And I'm not talking to them. I'm talking about Linda. And this is one of my very favorite third-party stories. As I mentioned earlier, sometimes the situation calls for us to be extremely bold. Now, when Paul talks about being bold, he doesn't mean being pushy and overbearing. Biblically speaking, being bold simply means being willing to open our mouth, even when it's very uncomfortable to do so. In 2 Corinthians 5:20, Paul says, we're begging you to be reconciled to the Messiah. And sometimes it may be appropriate to do just that. To literally beg someone to trust Jesus. And I want to tell you about a time that I did that. I probably mentioned that I'm a hospice volunteer. And one of my patients several years ago was an elderly man who was dying of cancer. He was a 50-plus year Jehovah's Witness. He had studied the Bible with the Watchtower for over 50 years. And the first day that I met him, one of the things he said to me was, he said, Jeff, you know, I'm not sure whether Jehovah will accept me when I die. And I said, well, Wilbur, maybe we should talk about that, which we did for hours and hours and hours over the 9 months I was with him. And I explained all the passages, who Jesus claimed to be, what he did, and he would have none of it. And he finally ended up in the VA hospital in Dayton. So one Saturday morning, I woke up and thought, I'm going to go visit Wilbur. So I drove to Dayton, went into the VA hospital, and he was actively dying. He was very, very close. But he recognized me. He knew who I was. I sat down, and I took his hand, and I said, Wilbur, pretty soon you're going to die, and you're going to stand in front of Jesus, and he's going to look at you and say, I don't know who you are. I said, I am begging you. Let Jesus into your heart. And he did. He prayed with me. And a few hours later, he died. So when you're talking to someone who may be dealing with a serious illness, don't be shy. Be bold. Don't be pushy, but be willing to talk to them, because that may be the open door for them. Now, sometimes God will drop someone who's spiritually open right into your lap. One time I was going to the hospital to visit a friend of mine, and when I walked in, a young lady was there that he knew from another group he was involved in. He introduced us. I said hello. We started chatting, and this was one of the guys I go to church with. And so one of the first questions she asked was, how do you two know each other? What do you think I said? We go to church together. So during that conversation, I asked her about her spiritual values, and she said that she had been studying Buddhism for several years. Now, what we didn't know, because she didn't tell us, was that shortly before that, she had said a prayer to this nebulous being she didn't even know existed. And it went something like this. Okay, if you're really there, if you do exist, then you show me in a way that I can recognize and I'll respond. And then she said this. She said, I have several questions that I want answers to. And here they are. And she told God what they were. And then she said, by the way, I'm not going to tell anybody else what those are. If you're real, this should be easy for you. So there. That was her prayer. And after a long conversation in the hospital room with my friend and myself, she prayed to trust Jesus. And she told me a couple of years later that that discussion we had with her answered every single one of those questions. Now, that was a divine appointment, right? But we would have missed it if we hadn't been looking for a way to turn the conversation in a spiritual direction. Now, I have a favor to ask each one of you. I'm totally convinced that giving this workshop, encouraging and equipping believers to talk about spiritual things more, is the primary role that God has for me to play. And the older I get, the more time I want to spend doing it. But to do that, I need an audience. So I'm going to ask each one of you if you would please consider promoting this workshop to your Christian friends. I have some business cards with my givingthegospel.com website on it that I'll set up here afterward if you'd grab one or two. And next time you're talking to a Christian friend, no matter where they go to church, if you would mention it, I would sure appreciate it. Would you like to hear a few more stories? Okay. You may get the chance to spend someone who's right at the end of their life, like my friend Wilbur in the hospital. And usually people at this stage are not distracted like we are. There's no concern for that new house, the next car, the next vacation. And not always, but often, this is when they're the most open to spiritual things. Several years ago, a number of us hospice volunteers got a batch email from the organization we were with talking about a young man on the west side of Columbus in a nursing home dying of AIDS. And he was in his 40s. And they asked if there was anybody who would be willing to spend some time with him. And, of course, I responded and said I would. So I walked in, and it was pitiful. He wasted away to nothing. He was in chronic pain. He was in a wheelchair. And it was really sad. And so I introduced myself, and one of the things he asked me was, how did you find me? And I said, well, I'm a hospice volunteer. Actually, this church I go to has a group of hospice volunteers. And then church was on the table, and eventually I asked him about his church background, and he looked at me and said, I never went to church. I don't have a church background. And so as I said earlier, what I always say to a person like that is, I said, boy, lucky you. You got a great advantage over the rest of us. And he said, what do you mean? I said, well, think of all the wrong stuff you don't have to unlearn. And he thought that was hilarious. He was a smoker, so I took him out to the smoking area several times. The weather was nice, and I had about 3 hours with him. And a little bit later in the conversation, I said, you know, John, I know you don't have a church background, but have you heard of Jesus? And he said, oh, yeah, I've heard about him. And so I explained the simple gospel, the bad news, our guilt, and he said, believe me, I know about the bad news. And then I explained the good news. And once he understood God's offer, He wanted to pray with me right then, and I stopped him. It's something that I always do. And I said, now, I want to make sure you understand what you're doing. One of the things I told him was saying a simple prayer won't make you God's adopted child. Only a decision will do that. This prayer is just your way of telling God that you're making that decision. And he understood, and he prayed with me. And as I was leaving that day, I looked at him and I said, John, 1,000 years from now, you're going to be so glad you made that decision. And he looked at me and he said, oh, I already am. And a few days later, he died. Now, by the way, I always use the word decision when I'm talking to somebody about becoming God's child, about salvation. I don't think there's any better word than the word decision. How many of you have seen an old Billy Graham crusade on TV? Most of us have. The title of that show was The Hour of Decision. Remember? Sometimes a very direct approach is appropriate. And actually, the better you know someone, the more direct and sometimes even blunt you can be without risking the relationship. I want to tell you a story about my mom. My mom is someone who has always, as far as I can remember, been closed to anything spiritual. I've asked her several times why, and she doesn't really know. And she always changes the subject when spiritual things come up. So several years ago, my dad passed away. He was a solid believer, and he had some notice. He had cancer. He knew he was dying. And at one point, he needed some outpatient surgery. So I told my mom I'd come down. I grew up in Charleston, West Virginia, so I told her I'd come down, spend the weekend, take him to his surgery on Monday, and then get him back home and come back and run my dental office the rest of the week. So I went down on Friday. We took him to the hospital on Monday and dropped him off. And on the way home, the conversation went around to one of our relatives who had recently died. And I don't remember, what I said, but I brought up something vaguely spiritual. And she looked at me and said, you know, I will never believe that someone can live a lousy life for 80 years and say a prayer at the end of their lives and go to heaven. I refuse to believe that. And I thought about that. And I thought, what does my mom need to hear? Well, she needs to hear the parable of the landowner who hired workers at 8 in the morning and 4:30, and they all got the same wage. So he had some complications. He didn't come home until Thursday or Friday. So I ended up spending the whole week there. And so Sunday morning, I was getting ready to go home, and my mom said, like a good mom, can I fix you breakfast? And I said, no, that's okay. I need to get home. And then she made a really big mistake. She said, is there anything I can do for you before you go? And I said, well, there is one thing you could do for me. And she said, what? And I said, I want to show you something in the Bible. And she crossed her arms and leaned back in her chair and looked at me and she said, I don't want to hear it. So I crossed my arms and leaned back on the couch and I said, Mom, I've been with you here for 10 days serving you. I closed my office for a whole week to do it. I think I've earned a few minutes of your time, don't you? And she said, yep, you have. So I read her the parable. And I said, Mom, was it fair that these guys who only worked 10 minutes got the same wage? Of course it wasn't fair. It was way better than fair. And my dad, who hadn't said a word the whole time, looked over and said, well said. Now, here's another situation you may run into. The other person may open the door for you. They may start the conversation, like at Bob and Floyd's Tar Store in Portsmouth. You remember that one? I was in Portland, Oregon for a dental seminar many years ago. And as is my custom, I got up early Saturday morning and went out and walked around downtown hoping to bump into someone to talk to. And a young man who was maybe 9 or 10 came up to me. Now, this was on Saturday. That's the Sabbath, right? So he had a bag over his shoulder, printed materials. He was a Jehovah's Witness. So he came up to me scared to death and said, sir, can I talk to you? And I said, of course you can. And so he gave me a spiel, and he gave me a watchtower, which I accepted and thanked him for and put in my pocket. And after he was finished, I said, "Can I share with you something?" And he said, "Yeah." And I said, "Did you know that there's a way you can absolutely know for sure you go to heaven when you leave here?" And he said, "Really?" And I said, "Yeah, would you like to know?" And he said, "Yeah." So I gave him the gospel, talking about Jesus. And his mom came around the corner with a toddler in tow and heard me talking about Jesus. And she snatched him away like nobody's business. And as she was dragging him down the street, he turned and looked at me, and I mouthed the words, "I'll pray for you." And smiled, and he smiled and waved. And I never saw him again. Sometimes when you least expect it, God may bring a spiritually open person into your life, and you may only have 10 minutes with him. I live in Gahanna, and if you're familiar at all with Gahanna, there's a Speedway gas station just south of the high school. And the distance between the Speedway gas station and the back entrance to the airport is maybe 5 minutes, no more than that. So one Friday, I was in the Speedway, and I came out, and it was pouring rain, and a young lady in her early 20s came up to me and said, "Sir, I have to get to the airport. Would you give me a ride if I give you $10? And I said, "Sure, I'll give you a ride, but keep your money. I won't take your money." Her name was Donna. So we got in the car, started to the airport, and I said, "How's your life going, Donna?" And she told me it was a wreck. And I said, "Have you ever considered letting God play an active role in your life?" And she said, "I would love to. How do I do that?" So I explained the gospel. We pulled over in front of Lane Aviation. She prayed with me, gave me a big hug and a kiss on the cheek, and then she was gone. That took maybe 5 minutes. And finally, sometimes sharing the gospel will really impact a person who's already a Christian. I mentioned before that I'm a dentist, and one of my rules at the office is I never talk to salespeople who come unannounced. I just don't. One time years ago, this has probably been 25, maybe 30 years ago, at the end of the day, we were standing around the front desk, and I have a wall with a window there. So when someone comes in that I don't want them to see me, I kind of go around the corner. And so I did that this time. Two guys came in. One was about my age. The other was about 15 years older. And for some reason, now I know now what that reason was, but for some reason I said, have them come in. I'll talk to them. So we went back and we sat down. They were trying to get me to sell some kind of a product to my patients. And their spiel was, you can make a lot of extra money doing this. And I said, no, I'm not really interested. And the one guy, the younger guy, looked at me and said, "Doc, you can fund your whole retirement doing this." And I said, "My retirement's already taken care of." And he said, "How did you do that?" And I said, "Oh, you mean the money retirement?" I said, "I'm talking about my real retirement. I know where I'm going to spend forever because I'm a believer in Jesus." And they looked at each other, and they looked at me, and they said, "Okay, thanks," and they got up and left. Now, 5 minutes later, the older guy came back in and said, "Can I talk to you?" I said, "Sure." So we sat down, and he said, "I want you to know that I've been a believer in Jesus for a long time, and I've been very hesitant to share my faith. But the fact that you didn't know us from Adam and talked about Jesus is going to change my life. I can't wait to get to heaven and see some of the people who were impacted by this guy's change in attitude." One of the last things I want to do is to urge each one of you to make it a personal goal to help someone else catch this vision for sharing their faith. This may be one of the most significant things you could ever do. I spent a lot of my Christian life thinking that if I spent the majority of my time sharing the gospel, that my life would have the biggest impact. But in the last few years, I've started to realize how critical it is to help someone else catch that vision, because you never know the impact they're going to have. Many years ago, a young man came to faith in Jesus, and someone encouraged him to go out and share his faith. And the person who encouraged him thought that was a pretty small thing. And at the time, it was. But he had no idea what impact that would have, because that little boy's name was Billy Graham. So you never know. we can have a huge impact on the world by helping other people catch this vision and by helping them learn some of these creative ways to share their faith. Now, I've given you folks a lot of things to think about in the last couple of weeks, and you may be sitting here thinking, you know something? I don't think I'll ever be able to do this on the fly while I'm in a conversation with someone. And if that's the case with you, that's okay. You don't have to. Remember that the best way to do this, to get good at this, is to simply ask questions, listen to the answers, write them down, and think about them. Then you can go back to that person and bring up something they told you. And now you're right back in the same conversation. And you can say what you wish you had said the first time. This is the very best way to develop skill in this area. If you do this, if you start asking more questions and listening and remembering the details, you're going to make an eternal difference to a lot more people. Once again, I want to remind you to go back very soon to your handout and review the things that you circled, the things that really impacted you, and pick one and start using it right away. Then after that one's comfortable for you, go back to your handout and pick another. And do that over a period of months. And as you do this, as these things become comfortable for you, you're going to find out that your thinking and your approach to people changes. Now, again, if you read something that doesn't register with you, that sounds awkward in any way, take it and change it to something that does sound normal to you. Again, these things are guidelines. You can use these word for word, which is something I typically do because they sound normal to me. But if they sound awkward to you, then go ahead and change them. The last thing on your handout is a list of some of my favorite books on sharing your faith. The last two slides. Now, one of the things that I mentioned earlier is that my friend Bill here and two other friends of mine get together every other week. We do it on Saturday morning. We get together, we have breakfast, we go to some quiet place and we pray together and we go through one of these books. We spent about a year and a half going through Questioning Evangelism by Randy Newman. This is not the guy that wrote the Short People song, okay? He said he still gets hate mail from people about that song. And he has to tell them, no, that's another Randy Newman. This guy grew up Jewish. And with Jewish people, a question is the most normal thing in the world. How did you enjoy the pie? How would I enjoy the pie? And that's the way he talks. So that, right, Bill? This book was really, really good. What we did is we got together and we prayed. And then as we went through this book, everyone had a copy. And we went through and each of us read a couple of paragraphs out loud. And then we discussed it. You'll be surprised how much more you retain when you hear someone else read the book out loud. Just a suggestion, but that really works for us. So we're finally we're now working on Share Jesus Without Fear by Bill Fay. This is not an exclusive list. There are lots and lots of really good books out there. And this is just one suggestion I have. But one thing I'd like for you to really consider is find another couple of friends who either are into sharing their faith or would like to be. And pick one of these books and get together on a regular basis and encourage each other. It's been really encouraging for us. So that's really all I have. We have plenty of time, so let's have some interaction. Yeah, Jack. Do you want to use the mic?
I'm going to guess I'm sitting here thinking at least what several other people are thinking is, you are so smooth. It's like you this just rolls off your tongue. It seems so natural and so non-threatening. If I were a lost person, I would get saved, I think, if you shared with me. So I just need to keep telling myself, well, he wasn't necessarily born that way. It came through practice and trial and error and so on. But just specifically, what was the thing that you said to the girl on the rainy day that you took to the airport? Have you ever thought about giving control? What was it exactly? Yeah, I want to know word for word. I want to get down word for word because I will mess it up.
I said, have you ever thought about letting God play an active role in your life?
Letting God play an active role in your life. That is beautiful. That's worth $1 million. That's great.
Well,
letting God play an active role.
It sure impacted Donna. But keep in mind that God knew two things. Well, he knew more than two. But the two he knew that day was, number one, Donna was open. Number two, Jeff would open his mouth. And that's why he set that appointment up. The reason why this all sounds so natural to you, Jack, is because I've done this hundreds of times. And no, I am not a born evangelist. In fact, I'm not even convinced I have a gifting in this area, but I've been doing it for a long time. And if you guys are determined to get better at this, one of these days you'll look back and you'll think, it happened. I'm there. Now I think this way. Now I look for actively look for ways. You'll get there. Bill.
I remember that you said something before you asked her about letting God into your life. And it was a short, easy question, as I recall.
Yeah.
Do you remember what you said?
I said, tell me, Donna, how's your life going? Nice, open-ended question. And everyone you say that to is going to tell you some things about themselves. So just the shortest open-ended question that lets them open up. And the fact that I was more than willing to give her a ride for free, I served, I met her physical need at the time. And that gave me some great credibility. Yeah, Paul.
Hi, that same story.
Here.
I can hear, but you guys can't. Yeah, that same story really spoke to me, and thought I first had was, well, why did she go up to you? There's probably other people in the gas station there at the time, and I think it's a case of, I think that verse that said that it may be ready on your lips, and in Peter it says, have your feet prepared, prepared for the preparation of the gospel of peace. And I think there's lots of different sayings about luck is where opportunity and hard work cross, you know. Well, you know, that's probably an observation of a scriptural principle that somebody made, that God, if someone's heart is that good and honest heart that's a good soil, that God's going to get them the gospel one way or another. You know, and if you weren't there, he would have got her to somebody else.
Yeah, hopefully that's true. You know, like I was saying before, the way we look at people, the way we think of people, sinful, messy, soaking wet, stringy hair, maybe homeless people, the way we look at those people and the way we think about them is going to determine how open we are to serving them. And I think we telegraph things. I think if we have a lousy attitude towards somebody, we don't even have to say anything. That's going to come across. The recent book that I'm reading is by a guy named John Burke, and it's called Unshockable Love. And this is what he's talking about. He's talking about the fact that Jesus was never shocked by anyone's sin, ever. He loves everybody. And we should at least be open to serving people. And I know people are messy. There are certain people that just repel us, and I understand that. But I think if we're open and we're willing to serve people, like Paul just said, God is going to make sure they find us. He's going to set these divine appointments up. But we're only going to catch them if we're actively looking. Yeah.
I want to thank you for the seminar, and I especially want to thank you for what you said about sharing with your mom and taking off the time to serve her. And I think that's probably one of the hardest things for me is becoming a Christian at age 20 and sharing with my dad. And for the last 40 years, he wants nothing to do with God, nothing to do with the gospel. He's a Mason. He's just, you know, very good works oriented. And to be honest, I've just grown weary. And I think of that verse, don't grow weary. And I've just grown weary, and I can feel myself. I joke with my son-in-law about slipping into Jonah mode. You know, I'm done. I'm done with these Ninevites. I'm just done with them. Yeah. And it's just easy to do that. It's just grow weary. And so I just, one, just ask for prayer on that, prayer for my father, because he is 90, and you know, the opportunities start getting fewer and fewer. And so I appreciate your prayers on that. And also on another situation, Friday, my wife and I were coming home, and there was an accident on our road, and this guy had, his car had flipped on the curve, and it was upside down, and there was State Highway Patrol there, and I didn't think he survived it, the way the car was crushed in. And they told me he went to Grant, which is where I used to work years ago in the trauma unit, so I just thought he probably wasn't going to make it. Well, today, when we were coming over to the seminar, there was this truck pulled where the accident was, and this guy was out there looking for something. My friend was with me, so we rolled the window down, and, hey, how's it going? What, you know? And I said, now, were you in that accident? He goes, yeah, that was me.
Wow. And
I said, well, I just want you to know, I prayed for you. I don't know how you made it out of that. He goes, I don't either. I said, what's your phone number? So he gave me his phone number. He told me where he lived, and I just want you to know you've inspired me to reach out to him. Because wow. I said, I don't know how you survived that. I said, we prayed for you. I don't know what. He said, I don't know how either. So it was, you know, it was one of those situations. It's a dangerous curve anyway. And now we're stopped on the curve talking to the man who was almost killed on the curve. And I didn't really want to get out and talk and have another accident there. So but I just wanted you to know you've inspired me to, he lives just down the road. And it was kind of along the lines of what you were saying there. Just sometimes people are messy, and I could just, when the State Highway Patrol were there and I was talking to them, and they were like, oh, yeah, he's just a drunk, and pizza was on the seat, and you want a piece of pizza? And I'm like, no, that's all right, thank you. And it's just kind of this callousness that you can get. And I know I felt it as a nurse, you know, in trauma. You just get callous, and you get cold, and you can see it in the State Highway Patrol. And so it's just, anyway, thank you very much.
Wow, what
Since
a great
you mentioned
story.
It, do we have to keep you accountable now?
What is your father's first name?
My father's first name is Charles.
What is this young man's name?
His first name is Joe.
Okay, let's stop and pray for Charles and Joe. Whoever wants to pray, please grab the mic.
Heavenly Father, we come to you right now, God, being mindful that our days are short here, Lord, in comparison to all of eternity. Yeah. And some people that we run into, their days may be shorter than they think. But, Lord, we do pray for Charles and Joe.
Yep.
Lord, each, you know the length of their lives. Mm-hmm. You know how much longer they have. Lord, and you have the ability to know what their decision is going to be. We don't know that. God, we do pray for Charles. Lord, I pray that there would be something just come upon him that he would want to know. As he gets closer to the end, Lord, he's going to want to know, you know what life is like in heaven.
Yep.
You know, how could you, if you find out what it is, would you not want to go? Lord, we even pray for Joe. God, thank you for the miracle that you spared that man's life.
Yes. Yep.
Lord, that's evidence that you have a specific plan for Joe's life.
Yep.
Lord, I pray that you would keep Mark, have it ever on his mind, ever on the forefront of his heart, to pray for Joe and to follow up with Joe. And I'm going to pray, God, that you would have Mark invite Joe to come to church on Sunday morning, mm-hmm. Lord. I just pray for that, and I pray for everybody else that goes on that dangerous curve, Lord, that you protect them as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Amen. That's really cool, Mark. Yeah, God had you there for a reason. Yeah.
It's really weird for me. All right. So I'm basically like a 3-month-old in my journey with Christ. But I had a friend reach out to me today, a childhood friend, known him since we were really young. And he just told me, he was like, hey, I am at a very bad spot in my life, and I was wondering if there's any way that you could come talk to me. Mm-hmm. And for me to even be able to say anything to him, I don't think if I hadn't been here the last 3 weeks, I wouldn't even know how to say anything to him whenever I go to have a conversation. He knows where I've been. He knows where my life has been the last few months. And I've even told him about every fantastic, great, wonderful, horrible, amazing thing that I've been through. And I'm thinking that I feel like he's ready to finally be happy. And I'm just really grateful that I was able to come and be here to listen to you. And then I'm really, really hoping that I can utilize it in a positive way tonight, you know, and hopefully help somebody that's a very kind person that's just really lost right now to come to Christ and change his life too. So thank you very much.
You're welcome. What's your name?
Rhiannon.
Rhiannon. That's right. What's his name?
Matthew.
Lord, I want to pray that you use Rhiannon in a powerful way in Matthew's life. Lord, use your Holy Spirit to draw him and convict him, and use this bad spot he's in his life to open his eyes, protect him spiritually. And Lord, thank you for putting the two of them together. Truly. Still have some time. Anybody else? Yeah.
So if you open one of these conversations with somebody asking about their spiritual background or whatever, where do you go with it if they're Muslim, Hindu, Buddhist, you know, whatever?
Well, the best suggestion that I can make is, and I think we talked about this before, but whenever somebody is into anything spiritual, whether it's Buddhism, Hinduism, Wicca, channeling spirits, doesn't really matter. What I like to say is, boy, it's great you're into spirituality. Tell me more. And then sit back and let them tell you. If you really listen, they're going to share some things with you that you can use. It's really good if we know some things about some of the major religions, Hinduism, Buddhism, that sort of thing, Jehovah's Witness, Mormons. If we do a little study and learn some things about what they've learned in their life, then sometimes it's easier. But if you ask somebody to tell you about their spiritual beliefs and they go on this long monologue and you listen and you're interested and you ask questions, at the end of that, you can say what I said to the lady at the Christian Science Reading Room. Wow, that's really fascinating. Thanks. Would it be okay if I shared with you some of what I believe? And at that point, you'll have the credibility to do that. So the basic principle, at least for me, is affirm them, you know, instead of correcting them. Say it's great you're into spiritual things. And then let them talk to you. That's just my suggestion.
Before we do that, I want to add one thing of what was said about just the fact of sharing and then follow through. You know, Jeff is really good at not only doing the sharing of the gospel, but then sending out this text messages to a group of lots that we all agree that we would pray for whoever Jeff is sharing with. And so when you do share, I encourage you to find a prayer partner, at least one.
Start with Jack.
And go from there. So in this case, you know, I shared a gospel with a lady named Jenny this afternoon, and please pray that that seed that was planted would be watered and take root. And so it's a technique that Jeff uses that he didn't share. I thought I'd bring it up.
Yeah, it's really easy. Now, I did not make that up, okay? A friend of mine gave the idea to me. He started a list, and I started my own list. But just about everybody texts. Not everybody does, but a text is such an easy way. You know, you can go, there are lots of apps for group texting, and just put out just the person's first name and ask for prayer. When we, you know, one of my favorite sayings, and I know this is very biblical, but one of my favorite sayings is this: God will do more of what he wants to do if we ask him than if we don't. And so I really don't know what these prayers are going to accomplish for people. Or if I see somebody at a bus stop and I pray, Lord, if this person doesn't know you, and we've all done that sort of thing. But I bet you when we get to heaven, we're going to find out that those prayers really count for a lot. So, yeah, that's something that we do all the time.
This is more of an observation than a question. I think, to me, one of the real beauties of your approach is that it reflects your conviction. It's very apparent that the Holy Spirit is at work. Because to listen to a person, to be gracious, takes time.
Yeah.
And you have to close your mouth and listen to the person attentively and pay attention to what they're saying. You know, when a person talks to you, or you're talking to a person, you're telling them something, but they're not, the way they respond, it shows they weren't even listening to what you said.
Yeah.
We don't want to be that way. So obviously you're a very good listener. I think for me so much, my orientation has been the opposite of Colossians 4 says, let your speech always be, right. The verse right after 4 and 5 says 6, let your speech always be with grace, seasoned as it were with salt. But what I tend to do is think, back up the salt dump truck and put all the salt on them, and I have to, you know, hit them with this real zinger, this pithy thing that I've got to say to really nail them and show them they're a sinner. Not that it's wrong to share those verses, but it's be gracious and season it with salt, not, you know, wham them with salt. And it's like you just have this confidence that just a little salt is going to turn the conversation and make the difference.
It took me a long time to get to the point where I am satisfied by just planting a seed. I used to do a lot, you know, I'm not a quiet person by nature. I'm a talker. But it took me a long time to understand that if I can put myself in the other person's place, who would I rather have talk to me? Someone who asks questions, who's patient and gracious, or somebody whose attitude is they're right and I'm wrong and they're here to correct me? That's easy to know. But it's hard to do. It was hard for me to do. And I don't do it all the time. Believe me, I stub my toe a lot of times. But I think the more aware we are of the need to become that way, the better. But I relate to you, Jack. I tend to be the same way. Anybody else? Yeah, Hutch.
From the very first time that you had spoke a couple weeks ago, I had debated about whether to share this or not. But many of you know that I used to sell cars at CarMax. And they have a pretty extensive training on how to try and relate to people. And being able, you know, one of the techniques that they talk about is a little acronym called Mr. Ben. And so it's M-R-B-E-N, Mr. Ben. M-R is make a recommendation. B-E is benefits are explained. And then N is normalized. You could even use that for the sake of sharing the gospel. You know, it's like you're talking to somebody, you can make a recommendation. And it's great to try and get people to do things not by saying you should, but you always put it on their terms. And I've heard you say that. It's like, you know, you're asking them about their situation. You know, it's like, you know, may I make a recommendation or make an observation or something like that? Like you were asking the one lady about, well, how's your life going? You know, but it might be something to put in your hip pocket if you think about that, Mr. Ben. You know, just make a recommendation. Benefits of heaven are explained and normalizing. You know, all the things that you're saying, the things that we go through in life, they're normal to everybody, you know. So I just thought I'd share that. And it does get easier the more you do it. I even opened up a spiritual conversation today with one of the tech ladies at the cool eye doctor. You know, I was just talking to her, and then it, just going from, you know, you guys probably don't believe this, but I can tend to be goofy at times. so it went from that to actually talking about the morals in society changing. And then she opened up about her family and about her husband and her mother-in-law, and just asking them a question about, you know, if you don't mind me asking, did your mother-in-law have any kind of a spiritual upbringing? And she was, just said, no, not that she knows of. So we started to go in there, and then I was like, oh, I had to go to the next room, so I didn't get a chance to finish talking with her. But, you know, I'm practicing, you know, just to try and ask those questions.
Good. Well, we all have to start somewhere. I told you the story about one of my early attempts at doing that. I completely blew this guy away. Completely. So, but we learn from our mistakes. That's neat. Thanks. Anybody else? Well, let's have a couple of us pray. I'm going to go ahead and turn this off, Ashley, okay?